Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. My guest today is 22-year-old Alex Fidel. And what is important about his age? I remember when I was 22, I'd been married 3 years. I had one baby, my son Casey. I had one on the way, and I thought I was so old. But looking back over the years, I recognize how young and fresh that is. But Alex has quite an extensive bio. He's already an amazing activist. And I would read his bio, but I'm going to let him tell you and me about himself. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Alex Fidel. Alex Fidel, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thanks, Cindy. Thanks for having me on. It's great to be on here.
Well, thank you. You also have a radio show, and I've been on it a couple times. So why don't you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself and about your show, and then we'll talk about the Cannabis and Hemp Initiative and your other political activism.
Sure. I come from a kind of independent musician background, but I was kind of always politically astute in that if there was ever to be totalitarianism, that's where music tends to get banned. So from all types of situations, so that kind of got me concerned about the future, given, you know, Patriot Act and everything that came under the Bush administration for in the name of the war on terror. So kind of led me to become an independent journalist. I started Free Thought Radio in 2010 in college, and I took it seriously, unlike some college radio. And wanted to cover things that were not being covered, such as the continuation of the Bush war crimes under President Obama, as well as interviewing some of my favorite people, musicians and activists and politicians, et cetera, and got to accrue quite a laundry list of interviewing some of my favorite people. So that was pretty cool. And then I went out to AM radio down here in San Diego. I switched from Sonoma State down here to Palomar College, and they have a AM station. So it has a little bit more of an environment for me to really do radio journalism seriously, and especially since I get to compete against neoconservatives on the other side of the AM dial. That's a treat in and of itself. So continuing to expose the war machine and the banking cartel, the Federal Reserve, and the two-party system, and just things in general that don't get covered by the mainstream media. So I'm very glad to have started something that now is a well-oiled alternative media thing going on. And I didn't consider myself a journalist until I started seeing other people doing the same thing that I did, whether it be We Are Change or what Abby Martin is doing and so on and so forth. It's like, maybe I am a journalist.
So speaking of you compete with neoconservatives, in the AM, you know, the AM radio thing right there. How do you feel about, like, the so-called liberal people on radio, like Stephanie Miller or Ed Schultz or Randy Rhoads? I kind of lump them all together because I think that they just support the regime if their person is in office.
Yep, exactly. And now I see everybody with a I'm ready for Hillary bumper sticker. I just want to have a big sticky note pad and put, you know, torturing Chelsea Manning, supporting the CFR, laughing at a war with Iran, you know, AIPAC, et cetera, et cetera. What kind of liberal do you think this woman is? Like, Hillary Clinton is so part of the war machine. If anybody thinks that she's some sort of liberal, I would like to see where they get that notion from. I just see nothing but another cog of the war machine in Hillary Clinton, and I hope that we just put the two parties down for good. Just put them down and walk away from them like they are spoiled potatoes. And
put them down or flush them in the toilet, like I said. If it's very grand, flush it down. But you know, speaking of Hillary Clinton, in 2007, I wrote an article for The Progressive about her so-called liberal credentials, and I called her a she-bush. You know, it's amazing to me that I read an article yesterday that people polled think that Hillary Clinton will be, you know, she'll fight for the people against Wall Street. Where do these people come from? Where do they get their information? What, she has no history of fighting for the people.
Yeah, if the CFR isn't the 1%, then I don't know what is.
Well, I always say if you support the Uniparty, the Democrats or Republicans, whoever wins, we always lose. And I just can't stand this, you know, this false battle we have. And the thing is we fight it down here in the 99%. We fight each other when we should be fighting them.
Yep, exactly.
just a continuing frustration for me, I guess. So, Alex, we have, you're supporting an important initiative that you want to get on the ballot here in California. And would that be for the June? Are you trying to get it on the June ballot? And
it would be for the November.
The process.
Sure. It would be for the November ballot if it were to qualify. In circulation right now, actually. It started October 1st, ends about the middle of February. So it's the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative 2014. It was written by the late Jack Herr, hemp activist, author of The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and it's certainly one of the most freedom-oriented initiatives. Doesn't create any new government agencies. It puts a cap on the tax of recreational marijuana only at 10%, so tax doesn't exceed 10%. No tax on medical marijuana. It leaves medical laws alone, which I think is good because it separates it for those that are sick, that to actually, you know, get the attention that they need, maybe particular strains that they need in a kind of a medical cooperative or collective situation where they don't get taxed as well, because I don't think medicine should be taxed. And it also legalizes industrial hemp. For personal possession, it's 12 pounds of processed flower, which is a lot, given that it takes about a pound of cannabis to produce the oil needed to cure somebody's cancer, or just one person, as in the Rick Simpson oil method. So 12 pounds is like 12 cures per person. And then 99 plants for your own personal backyard, more if you're a commercial cultivator. Retroactively, this is one of the most important parts, retroactively releases and expunges all people convicted of nonviolent marijuana crimes. So I guess throughout the history of conviction, you have something on your record. If it's not related to violence, if it's just simple possession or even simple sales, no criminal cartel activity, you are automatically pardoned and have your records expunged and released from jail if you are still serving. So it's a pretty powerful initiative. It also, here's where it works, it makes it a misdemeanor for federal agents to violate our rights. So if they come in and say, we don't care about this law, federal government reigns supreme, California state officers have an obligation to arrest those tyrannical federales from the DEA and protect both recreational and medical cannabis, which really kind of puts the teeth into the 10th Amendment. Aspects of this bill, and it would save the state of California half a billion dollars annually in both spending savings from cutting the prison industrial complex spending, and then tax revenue from the tax gained on recreational.
Well, I want to talk about the powerful forces that are allied against a bill like this first, but I mean. not first. First, I want to talk. I do want to talk about that, but first, I want to talk about, you know, not very many people know that hemp was criminalized. I think it was in the 30s, 1930s, because William Randolph Hearst was, you know, he had the big paper monopoly,
yep.
newspaper monopoly, and he bought forests to make the paper out of when the paper used to be made from hemp. And so he produced, you know, correct me if I'm wrong about this, but my information is that he produced, what was that funny movie
Reefer Madness.
About marijuana?
Reefer Madness?
Reefer Madness,
yeah.
to link cannabis and hemp. And they actually, you can't actually smoke a newspaper made of hemp and get high, but
yep.
Hearst wanted to link those two things together to criminalize hemp so he could profit off of his paper business.
Yeah, that was totally one of the big reasons. And then racism, they, you know, they didn't want those minorities to do marijuana and go after our white daughters and everything like that. That was literally their rhetoric. I hate to repeat it because it's so bombastic, but and it's not just, it's big pharma, given that, you know, both THC and CBD cause cancer cells to kill themselves in the concentrated full extract form from the cannabis plant, as in, you know, the Rick Simpson oil, or it's just basically super concentrated cannabis oil. Plastics, you can make plastics out of hemp, and now with the advent of 3D printing, using plastic to print whatever is 3D printed, you can use hemp plastic instead of petroleum-based plastic. So I think if we were
right.
to proliferate hemp, we could divest out of the war machine in a couple of different ways. So here's the first way that I find really interesting. It relates to the BDS movement, because Levi's has a factory in an illegal Israeli settlement. So if we all made a bunch of hemp pants here in California, created a bunch of jobs, and we could divest out of Israel by boycotting Levi's jeans and wearing hemp pants instead. And then the military-industrial complex is kind of, you mentioned forests for Hearst newspaper. Well, for toilet paper, they're kind of relying on these virgin forests in Burma, and they're using like the kind of military to take those resources over. And you have that kind of relates also to the killing of the Rohingya Muslims. That's all, that more has to do with an oil pipeline, but it's a kind of also resource resource extraction. So they're going in to kill a bunch of people over these toilet paper forests. Why not grow some hemp and make it out of that, where you don't have to kill anybody. You just create a bunch of jobs and nobody dies. We go and invade countries to get petroleum, which also is a used to make plastics. We could make hemp plastics here, a little bit more green friendly, environmentally friendly. And then finally, I think cannabis and hemp has been used as legal tender, or not legal tender, but just it's been used as kind of a medium of exchange to replace money. So instead of the Federal Reserve note that goes to pay for a bunch of wars and kill innocent people, I mean, really, the value of the dollar is kept up by killing innocent people, the whole petrodollar notion. So if we use something that's not tied to these central banks, such as cannabis and hemp, as just, you know, a medium of exchange, which is a useful tool. I think if we grow more hemp and grow more food, you know, organic gardens, local gardens, we won't really need money too much for because those things are going to be so plentiful that it's easy to give away to your neighbors or those in need. So those are all different ways that legalizing cannabis and hemp, I think, would divest out of the war machine.
Well, also, it can be used for fuel.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Another big one.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the powerful forces that are arrayed against, you know, an initiative like this. But I have, like, I use hemp milk. I have hemp oil for cooking. I have some clothes made of hemp. So how do I get that? How come if it's not legal, I have those products already?
It's made in Canada. So most, if not all, hemp used in the United States starts in Canada, because that's where they have it legal to grow. You can't grow it here. You can only consume it as a product, and it's just usually the hemp seeds, and then maybe the fibers for the clothing.
So it's okay to sell the product here, but we can't grow it and produce it. Well, you know, a lot of something that's very important to mention is that back in the beginning of our country, the so-called founding fathers grew hemp.
Yep. Exactly. So and also, given the food, given the Fukushima thing, I think we should just start growing hemp in mass to absorb all the toxicity out of the air and the soil. It's a very good ecological plan as well, just as a rotation crop to detoxify soil and increase the nutrients in the soil and detoxify the air and everything like that.
So let's talk about the powerful forces that are arrayed against an initiative like that. For example, the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, Jerry Brown and the prison industrial complex. Definitely going to be opposed to this one. But a lot of people are saying that since Colorado and Washington already stuck their toes in the water on this, that it's going to be much easier to pass no matter what kind of propaganda that they spit through the speakers. So I think it's much easier to pass. So what we really need right now for the campaign is volunteers, people to go out and gather signatures. If you go to www.cchi2014.org, that's cchi2014.org, you can find out how to become a circulator, and it takes about 750,000 signatures to get it on the ballot, and that's, you know, accounting for, you know, we want to get that number, so just in case they disqualify a bunch, we really need 500,000, but
we need a signature to get me on the ballot, so while you're circulating my petitions, you can circulate this one, but Alex, we had a legalization initiative on the ballot in 2010 that failed. Why did that fail?
It failed because of, you know, special interests coming in with their propaganda. It also failed because of infighting within the community. And I would also, you know, I would be the first to say that Prop 19 was super flawed, but I voted for it anyways. I volunteered when I could, to the extent that I had a know-how of how to do activism. But I don't think there's going to be infighting, at least for this bill, because it's a little bit more well written, although there's going to be the antis for always, so we got to keep it positive and keep it unity and stand behind it. And like you mentioned, if people gather, if everybody who circulates petitions for your candidacy also circulates petitions for this at the same time, you just have the same person sign two different ones. You need to get 10,000 to get on the ballot. That's 10,000 marijuana signatures towards this initiative. So and they both kind of expire at the same time in the middle of February. So it's a great chance for those that support your candidacy for governor to just double whammy it and support cannabis and hemp.
And you already talked about Big Pharma. How is Big Pharma reacting to this initiative?
They're not going to like it, because if you could just grow your cure for cancer in your backyard, then you don't really need them, do you? They pretty much substantially lose out in just about everything that they dole out. That's why I don't like some of the healthcare arguments, because it keeps it within the frame of the allopathic big pharmaceutical medical industry. Like, do I want free access to poison pills? I'm not sure. There's a saying, you can't spell healthcare without THC. I'm hoping that we learn to, you know, get out of this allopathic kind of system that was actually set up by Rockefeller when he took over the AMA in the early 1900s. So it's there for a reason. It's to be an industry, so if there ever was a cure, it threatens the industry, and that's why they would be threatened by cannabis use.
Well, talk about your run for mayor of Encinitas.
Sure. Well, I decided to run for mayor of Encinitas when I found out that local government does matter. I was kind of egged on by a friend of mine coming on my radio show Christina, and she, I kind of, when she said that, like, maybe you should run for office, I kind of felt puke at the back of my throat, because I even though I'm an activist, it's kind of like politicians make me puke, but now I kind of see the necessity for it. I tried, when it was the new council at the beginning of the year, I tried saying, guys, why don't you pass sensible regulations for medical marijuana dispensaries instead of enforcing a de facto ban, because nowhere in San Diego is it regulated or recognized. You can complain about the types of regulations all you want, but any sort of regulations would mean that they're protected and recognized by the city, which would give them some, clout when it comes to the federal government, as opposed to just saying, hey, you guys are on your own. We're not going to come and save you if the federal government comes and tries to get you. So there's an initiative on the ballot in Encinitas for medical marijuana regulations, but I was asking them, pass something in the meantime, because sick and dying people are suffering for every second that passes. So they just stood there and stood silent. So I was like wondering what's up. I sent them an email to follow up, and I sent them some phone calls saying, hey, can I meet with you guys just to talk to you about the issue? And obviously compassionate issue. Got a call back from the Democrat on the council saying, this is not an important issue. You shouldn't try to take it on with us. We're not going to take it on. I'm trying to get reelected. This is going to look bad for me. You should just basically sit down and shut up. People just want to smoke their bongs all day. That's what he said to me. So I knew right. Kind of right then that they were a little evil. It got even worse. And this incident that I'm about to describe happened after Chris Stoner and before Boston bombing Watertown. So it's kind of like a police state incident where a kid had some troubles his mom reported him stealing her car when he actually didn't. She just thought that the cops could help him out, bring him in and help him out, which is, we've seen how many times that they end up killing the person that they try to help out. And I think this is one of those instances. They claimed he was hard to detain, so they threw a smoke bomb at him, at which point they got fired upon by a common shotgun below the waist. So they were not fatally wounded. Role of SWAT teams is for something that's already volatile. If it was an already volatile situation, he would have gone forward and murdered those cops if he really wanted to, but he didn't. He was fragile and vulnerable and ran away. And if he did do indeed what they said he did, which is shoot them, ran away to his mom's house, got locked in, and instead of bringing up the PERT, mental instability ward, they brought out the police state. Big armored soldier guys with smoke launchers and machine guns and armored vehicles, and drove the armored vehicle around the street. Even though the guy was in one location, they probably just wanted to get some overtime and run the gas card up for that big armored vehicle. Parked it right outside, and then they eventually went inside and found him what was an apparent suicide. A, they killed him and cover it up. B, the small army is totally going to exacerbate somebody's suicide. And C, if he were to come outside and put his hands up, oh, officer safety, bloodlust, and revenge, just like the LAPD did to Chris Dorner, they would have sniped him on site just for shooting an officer non-fatally. So either way, the kid's dead meat, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. That was certainly a scary incident with not too much public outrage. I know you courageously stood up for Andy Lopez. It kind of went under the rug, and then Watertown happened. I'm like, all right. That was a little bit of conditioning for the police state here in Encinitas. I got to go to the city council and give them a piece of my mind. So I had the speech prepared up. I came to the city council meeting. I submitted my white slip for the non-agenda item. I go in and pick up the agenda. Oh, what do you know? Another $25K in Homeland Security grants that they're about to approve, and I didn't fill out the pink slip for the agenda item.
Wow.
So they didn't pull it aside. They lumped it into the consent calendar with the minutes and, the other important stuff, and unanimously voted to accept it. And that's not it. I FOIA'd them. They already got $300,000 in DHS money to the fire department to be compliant with the Patriot Act. And I do not see what the Patriot Act has to do with fire safety. And it is totally messed up. They fluoridated the water, poisoned the environment. They all take nice big salaries and big pensions, and they even have an off budget called the CAFR, where they raise your property taxes to invest in Wall Street to probably beef up their 401ks that they have with the working for the city government, just wholly, wholly corrupt. And I want to interrupt their charade and be a strong independent candidate, hopefully with alternative party unity from Green, Peace of Freedom, and Libertarian parties. And I don't know if there are any other parties in California. I wouldn't want to go for the homophobic ones. I won't mention them by name, but.
Oh, you mean the American Independent Party?
Yeah.
I'll mention them by name.
Sure.
So, Alex, I just want to remind my listeners that you're 22 years old, and I see a bright future ahead of you and the state because of, your commitment to peace and freedom and justice and unfortunately, the un-American way. And we want to make it the American way, though. So we're running out of time. Can you again tell my listeners the website for the Cannabis Initiative and also your website?
Sure. The Cannabis Initiative, again, we really need volunteers and donations and just spreading the word, social media, getting this out on the Internet. It's CCHI2014.org, CCHI2014.org, where you can find everything. And my website is freethoughtmedia.org is my Free Thought Media Network journalism thing that I'm doing. And my campaign's website is freeencinitas.org. And I'd love for people to check it out, and I'm hoping to not go alone into this. I'm hoping that there is a Governor Sheehan in office at the same time. So get out there and be active and do what you can. We're all pitching our 2 cents here, and it eventually adds up, and hopefully we can't. I don't think we can wait until 2016 to change things. You know, prisoners rotting in jail. You know, war is happening, people getting bombed. We need to try to fix things as soon as possible. And we need to push for 2014 for Cindy and for the Cannabis Initiative and against the two-party system. I've just started to volunteer with Free and Equal, and I really support getting rid of the two-party system. I think that's huge. I think that's where the root of everything lies, and they're really the tool of the banking system and the 1%. They're divide and conquer, and hopefully we can break that cycle with Cindy for governor and legalizing hemp, I think, is a big detriment to the two-party system because both of them hate hemp.
That would be, yes, that would be a huge defeat for the 1%. So, Alex Fidel, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
That's the Soapbox for today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you learned something. I hope you were inspired to check out Alex's links and to actually get out in the trenches to help affect this change. We might not agree with each other 100%, but if we agree with each other 90%, 80%, whatever percentage, it will take all of us working together to defeat the 1%, all of us in the 99%. And there is a wide variety of ideologies and perceptions. And I think it's a matter of helping people change their perceptions of this country, of the 1%, of the forces that are actually oppressing us. So as always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank Alex Fidel for being my guest today and for the work he does, and you for listening and supporting the show and the work you do. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.